We will be reading from the 7th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, text 19. Are we ready? Bahuman Yanmanam Ante Jnanavam Mam Prapajate Vasudeva Sarvam Iti Sa Mahatma Sudurlaba Bahumam Gyanmanam Ante Gyanavam Mam Prapajate Vasudeva Sarvam Iti Sa Mahatma Sudurlaba Bahumam, sorry, Bahunam Janmanam Ante Gyanavam Mam Prapajate Vasudeva Sarvam Iti Sa Mahatma Sudurlaba Bahunam Gyanamam Ante Gyanavan Mam Prapajate Vasudeva Sarvam Iti Sa Mahatma Sudurlaba Bhavumam Yamanam Ante Samahatma Sudurlaba Yavanam Ante Yanam Prabhajate Vasudeva Sarvam Iti Samahatma Sudurlaba Bhavunam Janmanam Ante Vasudeva Sarvam Iti Samahatma Sudurlaba Yanam Ante Yanamam Prapajate Vasudeva Sarvam Iti Samahatma Sudurlaba. Others? Anybody outside? No.
Maunam Janmanam Ante.
Gyanavam Vamanam Ante. Gyanavam Mam Prapajate. Vasudeva Sarvamiti. Samahatma Sudurlaba. Bahunam. Many. Gyanmanam. Repeated births and deaths. Ante, after. Gyanavan, one who is in full knowledge. Mam, unto me. Prapajate, surrenders. Vasudeva, the personality of Godhead. Krishna, sarvam, everything. Iti, thus. Sa, that. Maha Atma, great soul. Sudurlaba, very rare to see. Translation. After many births and deaths, he who is actually in knowledge surrenders unto me, knowing me to be the cause of all causes and all that is. Such a great soul is very rare. So we can repeat the births. After many births and deaths, He who is actually in knowledge surrenders unto me, knowing me to be the cause of all causes and all that is. Such a great soul is very rare. We save that word for last. Then there's a purport by Srila Prabhupada. Shall we read that? Okay. The living entity, while executing devotional service or transcendental rituals, after many births and deaths, may actually become situated in transcendental pure knowledge that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the ultimate goal of spiritual realization. In the beginning of spiritual realization, while one is trying to give up one's attachment to materialism, there is some leaning towards impersonalism. But when one is further advanced, he can understand that there are activities in spiritual life, and that these activities constitute devotional service. Realizing this, he becomes attached to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and surrenders to him. At such a time, one can understand that Lord Sri Krishna's mercy is everything, that he is the cause of all causes, and that this material manifestation is not independent from him. He realizes the material world to be a perverted reflection of spiritual variegatedness, and realizes that in everything there is a relationship with the Supreme Lord Krishna. Thus he thinks of everything in relationship to Vasudeva or Sri Krishna. Such a universal vision of Vasudeva precipitates one's full surrender to the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna as the highest goal. Such surrendered souls are very rare. This verse is nicely explained in the third chapter, verses 14 and 15 of the Svetasvara Upanishad. Sahasra Shirsha Purusha Sahasra Kasha Sahaput Sabhumim Vivrato Vivrat Tatisha Sat Dasangulam Purusha Evadam Soram Yad Bhutam Yach Chap Pavyam Uttam Tatatvesh Ano Yad Anatirati. In the Chandogya Upanishad 15.1.15, it is said, Na vai vacho na chakshushmi na shrotani na mana misati akashate prana iti eva chakshate prano hi evatani sarvani bhavanti. In the body of the living being, neither the power to speak, nor the power to see, nor the power to hear, nor the power to think is the prime factor. It is the life which is the center of all activities. Similarly, Lord Vasudeva, or the Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, is the prime entity in everything. In this body there are powers of speaking, of seeing, of hearing, of mental activities, etc. But these are not important if not related to the Supreme Lord. And because Vasudeva is all-pervading and everything is Vasudeva, the devotee surrenders in full knowledge. So here we'll talk something about what this verse relates. After many births and deaths, he was actually in knowledge, surrenders unto me, knowing me to be the cause of all causes and all that is. Such a great soul is very rare. So we will talk about what Krishna is discussing that brings us to this point. We will also talk about what precipitates that surrender and what makes the surrender more internal. In the beginning of this purport, Prabhupada mentions that the living entity, while executing devotional service or transcendental rituals, after many births and deaths, may become situated in transcendental pure knowledge. So does this mean that rituals can also bring us to pure devotional service? Why is Krishna mentioning this? Are these rituals the ultimate transcendental devotional service? Who says yes? Who says no? Who doesn't care? Just checking. This is why Krishna is mentioning the transcendental rituals may not be as good as pure devotional service. But this is why Krishna is mentioning that after many births and deaths, one may get this knowledge. So the idea is you may want to be on the fast track. But even if people are on the slow track, they may get it after many births and deaths. The point is that what happens after many births and deaths? One gets the knowledge of Krishna. So this is the point. So in one sense, if we can get it quickly, this is good. But if it doesn't come quickly, this doesn't mean it's bad. It just isn't quite as good. Just like here it mentioned at the end of this purport, about verse 7:17, where Krishna was saying, of these, the one who is in full knowledge and who is always engaged in pure devotional service is the best. For I am dear to him and he is dear to me. Who knows what this is relating to? Krishna speaks before this. There are four kinds of people who surrender to me. There's the distressed person, the person who is in need of money or material things. There's the person who's just inquisitive. And there's the person who's in search of knowledge of the absolute truth. So what is Krishna indicating in this verse about these people? Which one of those four is good? Would that be it? They're all good. But which one is best?
The last one.
It's like if I say, what is good, 100 rupee note of 500 or 1,000? Of course, only the 100 is good now, but that's a different story. The idea is that this is why Krishna was saying the transcendental rituals, and after many births and deaths, he is sort of encouraging us, but letting us know it's okay. He's letting us know it's okay that if you're in search of material things, or if you want freedom from material anxieties, this may be good. And you can get to Krishna after many births and deaths. But it may not be the best. The best is if we just surrender to Krishna. And then we can get there quickly. So when we talk about this, one who is in knowledge of this, which is important, to have devotion or to have knowledge? Both are important. They have to go together like two tires on a car. You don't say which is important, the front tires or the back tires. You have both. So we have to remember, like Prabhupada says, that devotion without philosophy is sentiment or maybe fanaticism. In that case, sentiment becomes okay because they may not progress far, but at least they're not dangerous to others. And philosophy without religion is what?
Mental speculation.
Mental speculation. It may be like this, it may be like that. There are so many philosophers. At least they are starting something. But it is incomplete. So if we just have the devotion, but we don't know what the devotion is to, then our direction will be incomplete. And if we just have the philosophy, it will be dry because we don't take any action. So they have to go together. So we have different kinds of knowledge. One is jnana, study. The other is vijnana, realized knowledge. Which do we have to get? We have to get both. You have to start somewhere, right? Right? Like the realized knowledge is to know where the light, to see the light turn on. The knowledge is to know where the switch is. So if you don't know where the switch is, how will you turn on the light? So if we don't get some book knowledge, how will we get the realized knowledge? This way we also have to check. If someone says they have realized knowledge, let us check to see if it's the same that's in the book. Because we don't just invent something on our own and come to the same conclusion after many births and deaths. So what do they realize after the many births and deaths? And why does this help them? That what? Is what? He's the cause of all causes. This is the point. There's like the joke. What is it that is not caused by Krishna? Poor people have it, and rich people don't need it. What is that? What is it that's not caused by Krishna, and poor people have it? What is that? No? Mercy is caused by Krishna. What is there that's not caused by Krishna? If you think of any one of the three, you can get it. What is there not caused by Krishna? Poor people have it, and rich people don't need it. No, she just said that, and I said that was wrong. Okay, so if everything is caused by Krishna, what is not caused by Krishna? Well, say it. What is not caused by Krishna? What? No, no, that's not it. If Krishna is the cause of all causes, then what's not caused by Krishna? Nothing. What do poor people have? Nothing. What do rich people need? You could have gotten it by any one of those three. Because this is the whole point, is when the person doesn't realize that Krishna is the cause of all causes, they're not realizing this. And this is why I made the joke to make it obvious. Because when you think that Krishna is the cause of most things, but he's not the cause of my happiness, or the cause of my money, or the cause of my life and death, he's not the cause of these things. So when we're thinking we'll go to some alternate source, we think, well, I'm tired of the sun, I'll get sunlight somewhere else. We are actually making it harder for ourselves, not easier. When we're thinking we'll depend partially on Krishna and partially on ourselves, we think this will help us. Sounds good. I'll reach out to Krishna with one hand and I'll hold on with one hand. That way I have both things covered, right? Is that right? Draupadi was trying this, wasn't she, when they were pulling the clothes off of her? She was holding on with one and reaching out. But then when she reached out with both, Krishna supplied more sari. So when we realize that Krishna is the cause of all causes, what do we do? Surrender, because there's nothing else left to do. If Krishna is the cause of all the things, then there's nothing else to cause these. So this knowledge takes some studying, and it takes some realizing. So when we're talking about surrendering here, it's called precipitating. It means like raining. So we really add up. It's funny, it's like Rupa Goswami says that we accept everything favorable and reject everything unfavorable for devotional service. One devotee asked Prabhupada, he said, Prabhupada, I thought you said this Krishna consciousness was very simple. He said, no, I said it was easy, not that it was simple. He said, I thought you said this Krishna consciousness was easy. And Prabhupada said, no, I didn't say it was easy. I said it was simple. So simple meaning one. It's one thing that we do. But it's not easy because the mind tries to take us somewhere else. So this is how the surrendering works. Is it may be a gradual process, but at least we can start by knowing what things are favorable and what things are unfavorable. And at least if we can't Ultimately, we should surrender completely with our heart. And if we can't surrender with our heart, we try to surrender with our mind. And then at least in the beginning, we can surrender with our feet. Our feet get us to the temple early in the morning instead of to the bar or liquor shop late at night, correct? Right? Because where you go is going to determine what happens, right? You come to the temple early, you're not going to get drunk, right? You go to the bar, you're not going to have artik, right? So starting with where we go. Am I going to read a book about Krishna? Am I going to a temple? Am I taking my beads out or something else? What is it that I'm choosing to do? So even though the ultimate goal is to completely surrender our heart to Krishna, and we are thinking of this as a goal, we try to surrender our mind, like it says earlier in Bhagavad Gita, that you surrender the mind in the process, in the fire of the controlled mind. If we are reading, or we are chanting, and we are hearing this, then the mind becomes controlled. So we try to engage the mind in Krishna. We take the feet, we go to the place where Krishna is involved, whether it's to go to the temple, or to go to Sankirtan, or even to go to our own home to sleep, right? The sales trainer, Tom Hopkins, which someone was telling me that Bhagavan in France had them do some of the sales training, and he says that we must do the most productive thing at any given moment. So, is sleeping the most productive thing? At nighttime it might be, right? If it's time to go to sleep, if I go to sleep so I can wake up fresh for Mangal Artik, isn't that the most productive thing to do? But maybe not when Mangal Artik and rounds are going on, right? So we have to plan our day. A lot of it's the planning, right? It's like I didn't learn anything about cricket. You know why? Why didn't I? I didn't plan to do any, right? You look in my day planner, it says, you know, start today, Mangal Artik, then rounds, then things I have to do. The cricket is not mentioned once. So I didn't get around to learning it. I know it's a sport, and I know they have a ball and a bat and a wicket. And more than 7 players and less than 13. But that's about all I know, because I didn't make any plan for that. So in one sense, the ultimate goal is to completely surrender our heart. And we engage our mind in surrendering by concentrating more on what we are doing. But in the beginning, of course, we have to plan of what we're doing. What if we just think, gosh, I didn't do any rounds. Did we set aside the time for it? Did we have the inclination to do it? So part of this comes, the devotion will bring the knowledge, but part of this is lacking when we think I will get pleasure from somewhere else. It's like we're sitting by the Ganga, the source of the Ganga River, and we're thinking, yes, okay, I'm at the Ganga River, but where will I get some water? Okay, so you're showing me Ganga River, but I need water. Where will I get water? So, just like the source of the Ganga is the source of the water, Krishna is the source of everything. But we are thinking that I will get some pleasure somewhere else. I will get some benediction somewhere else. I will get something somewhere else. Because there is another source, right? Is there? Krishna is the cause of most things. Sometimes I think this in the West is a very easy way to make people look bad. Because we have a God, but he may not be all-powerful because there's also a devil. And the devil can steal away the souls, right? And some people are from the devil, so they're intrinsically bad. Do we have any people like that? Who are intrinsic? Even the demons like Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu, they originally, they are devotees. So we don't have that concept, what's called a fractured soul theology, that the soul is bad and the soul has to be made good. Our idea is the soul is pure, like water is pure. But if you take water and you put red in one water and blue in the other and green in the other, they all change according to what you added to it. But it doesn't mean it's green water, red water, and blue water. It means red, green, and blue have been added to the water. So we know that the soul is pure. But just like it may be covered with this color or with dirt, the impurities have to be taken out. But we know that the soul is pure, so we have a pure soul theology, but it can become covered. So the idea here is to really drill into our feet where we go, that I must go places in relationship to Krishna, because Krishna is the cause of all causes. There isn't any other cause. I must concentrate my mind on him, because there isn't anything else to concentrate on. I'll concentrate my mind on him. So when I'm chanting, you know, we have to chant attentively. The one devotee was chanting, and the two Yamadutas came to take him out of his body. He said, "You can't take me, I'm a devotee." So they went away and came back. He started chanting again, they came back. And he said, "Why have you come back to take me again?" Well, the Yamaduta says, "You've been calling us all your lifetime." And the devotee says, "How is that?" And the Yamaduta says, "Well, I'm nish nish, and that's na na, and you keep chanting nish 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 na na na, nish 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 na na na." And so here we are, right? So we have to remember what we're calling for. We have to do it attentively. And if we go and we ask Krishna for something, that's a prayer. But if we say we really want something, is that much different than a prayer? Or maybe Krishna doesn't hear that. Does Krishna hear that too? He said, "Gosh, I really wish I had this." Right? Does he hear that? He does. That's why I say, be careful what you wish for, you might get it. Fortunately, it came out good, because I was in Paris, France, and it was freezing cold, and I said, "Krishna, I'll make you a deal. If you get me out of this cold, I promise never, ever to complain about heat ever." 3 days later, a letter came from Prabhupada saying, "Please send 3 devotees to India." So when I got on the plane, it was 0 degrees. I got off, it was 30. Now 30 isn't that hot, but it is when you came from 0. But I remembered I promised not to complain about heat. Huh. There's other one. I didn't see this commercial, but they told me in Australia, the one man is wishing. The genie comes to give him a wish. He says, "You have 3 wishes." They rub the bottle like in the Arabs, Aladdin's lamp, and the genie says, "I'll give you 3 wishes." He says, "I want to be rich, cool, and irresistible." And he's turned into a chocolate cookie that's in the refrigerator. And the girlfriend comes home and says, Tim, where are you?" She goes, "Oh, look at the cookie." And she eats the cookie. She goes, "Wow, these are so rich and irresistible." So we have to be careful of what we mean by what's rich and irresistible, right? We want to be that, right? So we have to realize that Krishna knows better than we do what's good for us. So we need to do more studying of this, of how Krishna is all the cause of all causes. Because sometimes Krishna seems to be contradictory. Brahma was thinking this. He saw that, you know, this Krishna is playing like a cowherd boy. Yet this big Agasura came. And when all the cowherd boys and Krishna went in his mouth, Krishna expanded himself so big that the snake choked. He shouldn't have done that, right? When I was a child, I put a teddy bear down the toilet, and I told my grandmother, "I shouldn't have ought to done that." So I think that's the way Agasura felt after he swallowed all those coward boys. "I shouldn't have ought to done that." But it was too late then. He thought he would swallow Krishna. He would trick Krishna, right? So then he couldn't trick Krishna, so Brahma did. At least he thought he was going to, right? Because he's thinking that, you know, here's this Krishna. yeah, he's God, but he's appearing like a cowherd boy. Because see, our problem is, we're subject to the law of contradiction. If you're a bug, you're small, but you can't be big, right? If you're Brahma, you're big, but you can't be small. If you're in India, you can't be in America. If you're old, you can't be young. Right? If you're a man, you can't be a woman. So Krishna's not subject to these contradictions, is he? Lord Brahma mentions this later in the Brahma Samhita, that Krishna is Advaitam Achyutam Anadyam Anantarupam Adyam Puranam Purusham Navajovanamscha Vedeshu Durlabha Durlabha Bhakto Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. He is Advaita, he is non-dual. He is not different from himself. We are different from this body. He is Achyuta, he's infallible. He doesn't make mistakes. Raise your hand if that's you also. Which one of you doesn't make mistakes ever? Okay, which one only makes mistakes 5% of the time? Okay, which one's made nothing but mistakes? Oh. So, he is Achyuta, infallible. He is Anantarupam, existing in unlimited forms. And he is Adyam Puranam Purusham, the oldest person in creation. So is God painted as an old person?
No.
No? Is God an old person?
No.
Is God painted as an old person?
It,
yes. Where is it? Who knows? In the Sistine Chapel in Rome. God is an old man with a gray beard, and he's reaching out to touch Adam. But what's the use of being God if you have to be an old man? The comedian George Carlin must have heard this from Prabhupada's books, because he said that the thief is praying, "Please God, make sure that this shop is unlocked so I can steal something." And the shopkeeper is praying, "Please make sure that this shop is locked so no one can steal anything." And God becomes confused because he's getting contradictory instructions. No, God does not become confused by this. You think God has to sit around and wait for someone to pray to him, to tell him what to do, and he gets contradictory prayers and he's confused about what action to take? No, this is not the position of God. But this is what people are thinking. Oh, I'll pray to him and he'll change it all just for me, right? But it doesn't work that way. So he may be the oldest person in creation, but he's always appearing as a fresh youth, Navajovanamscha. And we have that. People have plastic surgery and lipstick. That makes you always appear as a fresh youth, right? Or makes you a little less old. It makes you old instead of ancient. Is that the same as being a fresh youth? Look, I look so good today, I only look old. I don't look ancient. Is that a good sign? They say, "Oh, you look old, but you don't look ancient." Do you say, "Thank you so much"? Do you? No? Everyone wants to look like a fresh youth, right? Everyone wants to be about 24. In that age, they're always lying and they're 12. They want to be 14. When they're 14, they want to be 16. 16, they want to be 18. When they're 18, they want to be 24. And when they're 30, they want to be 50, right? No. After 24, it starts changing, right? They want to be younger, right? Isn't it? Huh? And we were all young at some point. I remember every time, every year I come to Vrindavan, there's more and more young people. Isn't it true? Right? Because I was a young person. When we went in Laguna Beach, we used to have my friend Badri Narayan Swami is here. He and myself and one other devotee. On Saturday night, we would stay at the temple in Laguna. And we'd wake up early to help them make a feast. And then we'd all get our cars and we would take people to see Prabhupada and have a second feast. And I said, "Can I eat two feasts?" They said, "Yes, eat as much as you want. You're a growing boy." So I'm not a growing boy anymore, because that's been a couple years since that happened. But we see at one point we're a small child, right? And Prabhupada says he'd run up and down the stairs, and now he can't do like that. So we see the whole point here is to understand something about Krishna. And we get the realized knowledge when we surrender, but we also have to study some of this. This is one of the things Prabhupada said. That was one thing he was concerned with. His disciples didn't study his books. It kind of goes like the story. Does the book tell you about Krishna? It's like saying, does your watch tell time? No, I have to look at it. Right? It's the same way. Does the book whisper to you in the night, or do you actually have to read it? Now, you might play tapes and listen to them, but the idea is you have to take some action. It doesn't just sort of appear in your mind. We have to try to read these books and understand something about them. I was reading today about wonderful Krishna, that he's wonderful. I've even read in the Bhagavatam that on other planets, the pastimes are more advanced because people are more advanced there than they are here. And here on this planet, the Bhagavatam has only 18,000 verses, and in Brahmaloka it has 1,000,000 verses. So can someone write down the extra verses for me? Who wants to do that? You have a pen, right? Can you get the extra verses that are on Brahmaloka and write them down for me on a piece of paper? A big one. How big would that make it? How many words in a verse? How many words in this verse? Do we know? 17. Looks like 35 words. Oh, yes. Oh, in the Sanskrit. 17. Okay. So somewhere, so it would be 17 million words in Sanskrit? Maybe more? Who can write that down? Ganesh? Ganesh can write it. Can't he? If he did it here, he can do it there. But it may be more than for us. So at least we can study the ones that are here. Because if we don't study this knowledge, it won't help us. This is why I'm glad to have the Kindle. My friend Badahari was saying how it's made his reading quadruple, because I can carry all of Prabhupada's books in the one little thing, and we put some more. You don't have to even stuff it in there like a suitcase that's full. It's amazing. Even if I make the print bigger, it doesn't weigh more. But you can put all of Prabhupada's books in a little device like this, and it's better for the eyes than the... I like reading with books, but when you're traveling, you know, try to buy the fourth or fifth canto of Bhagavatam. You can't do it. But if you're reading in order, it just goes to the next canto automatically, and you can read more. So just like, you know, we always seem to find food. We either know where the prasadam hall is, we know where the restaurant is, we know where they sell food, and we either store some food or get a refrigerator or know friends that have food. We have plenty of ideas about where to get something to eat, don't we? I bet you could think of 10 places right off. In your shelf, in your refrigerator, prasadam hall here, MVT, Govinda's restaurant across the street, and they sell peanuts in the street, right? There's so many things, right? You know, you have many ideas in your mind about what to get, where you can buy fruit or something. So in the same way, we have to keep reading materials and beads with us so that when we get a chance, we read. And I find this with reading sometimes, like I went to the last year to have tests done at the hospital, and if I'm reading, if it takes 45 minutes instead of 15, then you get more reading done, which makes it good if you're waiting more time. When I'm waiting for flights, it's easier to chant before I get to the airport, and if I have to, I chant at the airport. It's funny when I'm trying to catch up on time when I come here, because I usually leave on a Sunday night at 9 in the evening, and you lose 13 and a half hours, so you don't get here till Tuesday. But when I leave, the flight leaves from Delhi at 3 in the morning. And I arrive in L.A. at 1:30 in the afternoon, but it's actually 25 hours later, because you gained 13 and a half hours, right? When it's 1:30 in the afternoon there, it's already 4 in the morning here. So I left at 3 in the morning, get there at 1:30 in the afternoon, and already 25 hours have passed. So, of course, then I like to chant. If I'm waiting for the plane early in the morning, I like to chant then at the airport. But then other times, I can read in the Kindle because it doesn't, other people don't seem to bother as much as they do when you're chanting. But either way, we can have these things with us so that we take Krishna with us. We don't think, hey, why are you praying? God's not, you're not in the church. You only pray in the church, right? It's not Sunday. Don't pray to God now. So when Krishna, these people aren't realizing that God is everything. It's like, you know, this is why we have a little trouble presenting our religion to people, because we want people, many of them live in an ashram and give up everything. And even when they don't, they still chant 16 rounds that takes hours. And many of the churches say, well, you just come on Sunday, right? It takes about 50 minutes. You come on a Sunday. Saturday, you confess the sins you made. And then you come to the church and once a week on a Sunday and you go home. That's easy. And all you have to do is believe. It's just like if I'm hiring people for a job and I'm saying, well, you have to work 8 or 9 hours a day and you have to work hard and you have to show up on time. And you tell the people, oh, with me, you just have to believe you have a job. Will he get more employees than I do? Yes? They tried to make it easy. In Nairobi, they would come to our temple and they say, I want to join your movement, but first I want to know how much you pay me. And we're laughing. They said, why would we pay you? He said, well, I became a Catholic, they paid me. Then I became a Baptist, they paid me. Then I became a Methodist, they paid me. Then I became a Lutheran, they paid me. Then I became a Mormon and they paid me. Now why wouldn't you pay me also? I was the one that looked silly, not them, because they go to these churches, they give them, you know, maybe 100, 500 rupees. If I say, hey, you want to join my shooty club? I give you 500 rupees. Don't worry, I'll give it to you in hundreds. What?
In this case, he has to give because he's getting the...
No, in that case, the church gives them something to join the church. So this isn't what we call surrender. The one person joined the temple in Nairobi and I said, why did you become a Christian before? He said, well, usually they either gave you a choice. You got two chickens or a goat. But this week there was a special. You got both. So I joined that week. I said, that's all it meant? So, you know, we can just increase the numbers. If I give people just 100 rupees or 500, I can start a new shooty church. All you got to do is put your name on the list and I'll give you this many rupees. Will they join? They'll all put their name on the list, right?
Now it's easy if you tell the queue they'll join because now everywhere there's queue in the banks and all.
Yeah. Yes. Because they don't have to do anything, right? Yeah. But then you don't get much result. Like he tells people all you have to do in his work is believe that you have a job. So then his work is easier. But at the end of the month, when my people get a lack of rupees and his get nothing, now which people are happy? But his wasn't so hard, right? But they didn't get it. He said, why didn't I get a paycheck? Well, you didn't do any work. He said, well, you said all I had to do was believe. He says, yeah, but I didn't say you would get paid for it. Krishna says, you can do anything you want, right? Is that true? You can do anything you want, more or less, right? But you have to pay the price for it, isn't it? Like you can go across the street to the shop and you can buy anything you want, but you pay for it. So when we work for Krishna, we get paid. When we work for ourselves, we have to pay. So it behooves us to try to understand spiritually and to understand through studies and through both things to get this realization that Krishna is the cause of all causes, that he is the source of everything. So there isn't something else to go to. It's like the tree. You know, which part is not connected to the root? Well, the leaf is way far away, so it's not connected, right? Is it true? Way on top of the tree, it's not affected? And when you water it, the water doesn't get to the top? It doesn't? The water doesn't get there? It does through the tree. If you water the root, it gets to the whole thing. Even though it looks like the leaves at the top are farther away than the ones at the bottom, they can get just as nourished. So when we're thinking that there's something separate and I have to get my ladder up there and water that leaf at the very top of the tree, and then I put water 1 week and it doesn't benefit it, and the next week I fall down and get hurt, when I could have just watered the root of the tree. So the trouble is we are not seeing that this. We think that there's something else. I have to have my family. And we all have our friends and our family and things that we're attached to. But at least we have to try to put Krishna first. You know, I have my family that's in different parts of the world, and I try to spend time with them. But I make sure that I come to Vrindavan to be with Krishna and to associate with devotees. Then I visit my daughter later on the island of Bali. Then I go to South Africa to do some preaching where Prabhupada sent me. The government threw me out, but the people threw that government out, so the new government loves for me to come back. So I spend my time doing that. So we have to realize, even if we have attachment to the other leaves and branches on the tree, we have to make sure to still water the root and make the root the most important. Doesn't mean we don't ever see our relatives or friends. Doesn't mean we never go back to our hometown. But we don't want to neglect Kartik in Vrindavan, or visiting Mayapur at the right time, or going somewhere preaching, doing something for Krishna. So again, we're doing this surrendering with different things, with our heart, with our mind, and with our bodies, our feet. We put ourselves on an airplane to come here or to go preach somewhere. We drive somewhere to distribute books. We walk to the temple to get there. We don't expect the sky to open up and have Krishna consciousness just fall on our head. We take action to realize this. But that's why I was saying after many births and deaths, because the good point is that the people who do want just freedom from distress and do want material things, they will get Krishna, and it may take some more time. People who even do just a few things in this lifetime, at least the next lifetime, they get a chance to progress in Krishna consciousness. But the point that's being made here is what is better, and that's why Prabhupada refers back to this verse of surrender. Because if you're asking Krishna for something, it isn't quite surrender. Okay, Krishna, I have a list for you. A little upset you didn't finish the last list yet, but I have a new list. Is this what we call bhakti? Bhakti means that we give a list to God and ask Him to hurry up and finish our list because I'm coming up with a new one. Is this what we call bhakti? If you have a friend, and every time they see you, they have a list of things for you to do, is this your best ideal friend? They say a friend in need is a friend indeed, right? Oh, I have a new list for you. I didn't finish the last one. Doesn't matter. You need to finish them both. So here's the new list. Get started on this right away. So how do you feel about a friend that has a list of tasks for you to do? Huh? No. So do we think Krishna is this? We approach Him with a list of things that we want to do? Okay.
Sometimes.
Sometimes, yes, but all the time. Because that's what I'd say, we may not be perfect, but is that the first thing we do? Like, I see some, oh, it's good to see you after so long, and say, oh, I need something from you, right? I need something from you, I have a list. How about hello, ask me how I'm doing, what's going on? So if we find out something about Krishna, and if He's the source of all that, He already knows these things. And if we try to surrender to Him, then we work out all the big problems instead of trying to solve each problem separately. The root of the problem is that I have forgotten Krishna. And the solution is to remember Krishna. And the ways to remember Krishna are chanting His name, hearing philosophy, remembering these things, doing service, making prayers, not for things for ourselves, but either glorifying Krishna or asking Him to remove the things that stand in the way of our service to Him. Because quite often that's the issue. That's what we should be praying for. Not give me some other attachment, but remove the things that are standing in the way of my service to you. Because quite often, this is what the issue is, right? It's like if there's a fire, and I'm going to put the hose here, but I'm going this way, and I'm putting the hose the wrong direction, because I can't keep myself balanced. So we know Krishna consciousness is the solution, but because we have so many issues that stand in our way of getting through to Krishna, this is what we should be asking for, to please remove these weeds, remove these defects, remove these obstacles, and it can happen quickly. So when we have like a root of material desires, we cut off the top of the root, right? That's what we try to do, but you're supposed to pull it out by the roots. Because if you just cut off the top, the root keeps growing. But quite often, this is what we want to do. We say, take it away for now, but, you know, just for now. Or take it away, but don't do it yet. Wasn't that St. Augustine, the Christian saint that said, please God, make me chaste to you, but just don't do it yet. So we think like this. We want to surrender, but we don't want to do it yet. We want to do it later sometime when it's more convenient. I'll wait till everything comes exactly the way I want it to be, and then I'll surrender to Krishna, right? Yes? But it doesn't work that way. Is there a prayer we can say to make everything turn out the way we want it to be? Who says no? Who says yes? The answer is yes. Want to hear what the prayer is? Yes. And particularly this, say, Krishna, today I wish that everything would turn out exactly the way that you arrange it to turn out. And then I get my wish, don't I? So the problem is what we're wishing for. Like if I wish for it to be Wednesday, okay, I get my wish. So if I decide that I'm going to make my wishes in line with Krishna's wish, then I don't become disappointed. If I try to force God to have him do it my way, I might become disappointed. Is it possible? Yes. It is possible. So it goes back to this. This is the whole idea, that we have to understand that Krishna is the cause of some causes? Not some causes. Many causes? Most causes. All causes. That's it. Not some, not many, not most, but all. Of course, it is the other ones too. If he's the cause of all, he's also the cause of many and the cause of most. But if you're thinking, well, he's the cause of most, that's why most of the things seem to be caused by him. But he's not just the cause of most, he's the cause of all. But we're thinking there's something different, right? Isn't it? Like the electricity. You think, well, some of the electricity comes from the light bulb and some is in the fan, but all of it is caused by the powerhouse. Except when it cuts off, and then it's caused by the generator. But it's all coming from the same cause, even though it comes out differently. So this is what it behooves us, to get this surrender. If we get some surrender, we'll realize Krishna is the cause of all causes. And if we realize that Krishna is the cause of all causes, then we'll realize there's nothing else to do but surrender anyway. If we realize that all these electrical things are coming from the same point, then, you know, we pay our bill to the electric company. We don't think, well, I'll stick it in I'll go in the bedroom. You know, you don't pay the bill, they cut off the energy. So in your living room, the electricity isn't working. So if you take a big cord, put it in your bedroom, and stretch it to the living room, it will work, right? Will it? Yes. No, because they cut you off for not paying your bill. This is the idea. If they cut you off for not paying the bill, you can't go to a different room and get the energy. So this is what we're thinking we'll do. I'm cut off for not paying my bill to Krishna. But if I just get it from a different source, it will work, right? We're thinking this way. But if you're cut off because you didn't pay the bill, you don't try to find the different sockets to use. You pay the bill and then they all work. None of them will work without paying them. So we have to pay our bill to Krishna. And we have to do enough studying. This is why we have the books. This is why we have the Gita class. Prabhupada made these books for distribution and to be decorations in people's homes, correct? Is that correct? It is true, but it's not the only reason. We are also supposed to read them. Because they do decorate nicely, and they are for distributing. But if they're worth distributing, shouldn't they be worth reading? Why would you ask someone else to read something you didn't read? Doesn't make sense, does it? I remember I was in Calcutta, and this one person looked in bad shape. He says, "You want to buy some morphine?" I said, "Why, you take this morphine?" He says, "Yes." I said, "Oh, then maybe I better not have it." He said, "Why?" I said, "Because you don't look like you're doing very well." And I didn't want, so you think of it. Someone like Vaisheshika looks so happy, what he's doing must be working good, isn't it? We think this way. If someone is doing something and is making them happy, it should make us also happy. So we will find it hard to distribute the books if we don't know what's in it. We tell people, this is a Bhagavad Gita, and it has 20 chapters. We don't realize there's nothing after the 18th chapter. Someone says, "I don't see any 19 and 20. Where did you find that?" "Oh, well, I don't read them. I just distribute them." Then what is the point, right? It should be the person is taking what they're selling, and it should be doing them some good, right? If you say, "Yes, I read these books, and I'm 30 years old, and it made me look 60. Now will they buy them? Say, "You know, I read these books, and in spite of what I'm going through, it makes me happy. Now will they buy them?" "Yes." "Oh, I'm so miserable. You want to buy one of these books for me? I read these books, and I'm miserable." "Oh, maybe not." So what was the whole point of this lecture? To realize what? Cause of most causes? Many? All causes, that's it. Okay, any questions or comments to this? And why do we forget that Krishna is the cause of all causes? Yes. You give him the other microphone?
When we say Krishna is the cause of all causes, then whatever good is happening, we say is Krishna is doing, and whatever bad is happening is not Krishna is doing.
Well, it's like going back to the electric. Is the you say that if the powerhouse is the cause of all electricity, why is there no electricity in that room? Well, because they haven't put the plugs in, they haven't turned the lights on, the energy is there, but they haven't connected to it. So it's the lack of it. You can't say, "Well, if you turn off all the lights in the other room, does that mean there's no powerhouse?" No, it means that it wasn't connected to there. So Krishna is the source of all the good, but you have to connect to him. So when we don't connect to Krishna, it's the lack of Krishna, which is the other things. And Krishna allows free will, so we can get what we want, but we have to pay for it. Even though we don't want to, right?
I cannot get it, because you see, Lord is giving us, he has given us everything. We are in Krishna consciousness, we are doing everything. But those who are meticulous people, they are getting also everything. It's not they are not getting, they are getting the food, they are getting air, they are getting sun, they are getting everything, whatever Lord is giving them. We are also getting same thing. Only they are not following the four regulative principles or other things, but Lord is giving them everything.
They may have to pay later. It's just like if I go and charge on the credit card, I think, "Well, hey, you had to pay. I don't have to pay." Then when the bill comes, if I don't pay it, the interest goes up even more. Then they cut off the card, and now I can't buy anything anymore, and I owe even more than I spent. So it catches up later. It's not like karma can happen instantly. Sometimes it can, but sometimes these things catch up later. People had some pious activities from a last lifetime. It's like if I give you a big stack of money and I give it to someone else and that person's investing it and saving it. And he says, "Well, hey, that person is off spending his. How is it that he's not going to be in any worse shape than I am?" But when it comes to the end, just like they go to the heavenly planets and you get your pious activities, but when the result is over, boom, you come back to a planet like this. So these laws of karma are very intricate, but just as some people are suffering, and the suffering is temporary, but that's like saying the one person went to jail and 10 years later he got out. He said, "Well, he did a crime, but he's out of jail." He says, "Yeah, but he spent time in jail." So the one person, well, he's getting good activities now, but when it's used up, it's all used up. whereas the spiritual things don't get used up. So a person may not have a lot, but if he's putting in spiritual credits, this will be eternal credits. Whereas the material karma may be coming your way, but when it's gone, it's gone. We can't think that because it's there now, it's okay. It's like when there's a water shortage. I told people that there's a water shortage in this area of India, especially last year. And they said, well, it doesn't seem to be water's coming out of the... But that doesn't mean the reservoir is not much more dry, right? So they may be getting the results of past pious activities. You don't expect that when someone does a pious activity, immediately there's a result. And when they do something wrong, think like the people go outside and they smoke cigarettes. Well, didn't cause them any problem now, right? But how many people get cancer? A lot? More likely people who smoke. But it doesn't come right away, does it? Does that mean it's not coming? It is coming, isn't it?
Everybody having his destiny, according to destiny, he has to suffer or he has to get something good. So according to destiny, they are getting whatever is in their destiny.
Yes, that's a mix.
So where is the cause of cause?
It's the mixed bag, because Krishna awards them according to their pious and impious activities. But Krishna is not tied to that law of karma. Krishna was preaching that karma mimamsa philosophy during the Indra-yagya. Because he was saying that, you know, you don't need to worship the demigods, because if people just do the right actions, the right things will come. Now, this is, to a certain extent, this is true. You do good things, you get good results. You do bad things, you get bad results. But Krishna is not subject to that. He can relieve us from our karmic results if he wants. And if we surrender to him, he can take away from these things. And it doesn't have to be the calculation of so much spent, so much owed, right? You spend 1,000,000 rupees, you owe 1,000,000 rupees. You know, you may have done some bad karmic activities, but when you're surrendering to Krishna, Krishna takes it away or reduces it. But, you know, you think of people that look like they're doing well, but when they get old and then they die, no matter how much money they have, they still suffer, don't they? And then the next birth, they take off from where they left off. We don't expect it to all come in 1 second. You expect someone to smoke a cigarette and die in 5 minutes from cancer? They don't die in 5 minutes, right? That means they won't get it, right? Does it? He smokes a cigarette. Well, so far it's okay, right? So it's not going to make a problem, is that correct? It's not correct, is it? Because it's building up over time. I try to tell these young boys they're too young to smoke, especially because the young lungs, they're doing that. You know, it gets worse when someone's young. It's like boys are like 12 and they're smoking. You have the cigarettes, you're too young for that. Not that it's good for older people either, but the result will come. And the darkness is like the backside of Krishna. When we forget Krishna, then we get dark. When it's dark, is because there's no sun. Does that mean there is no sun? No, but we turn away from it. Krishna allows us to work for ourselves and suffer the results of it. But it doesn't always come immediately. Does that make it clear? We got the search hat on. Something else? Yes. Why do we forget that? Yes.
That was your...
Why do we forget that? Yes. I was asking you that question. See if anybody come up with it. Why do we forget that Krishna is the cause of all causes? Because we want to think that ourselves can cause something. I will go and do something that I want, and through that action, I will create happiness for myself. Doesn't matter if last time I did it, it made it miserable. This time I will cause it, and this time it will make me happy, just because I want it that way. We think somehow if we want things a certain way, that it will make it better or make it more possible. The more I want it, the more possible it becomes. Is that true? Not necessarily. If we want something, it may make us take steps to get it, but it doesn't automatically make it more possible. What makes it more possible is our actions, and even more than that is Krishna himself willing it. So it's because we want something else to be the source of happiness. We want some outside source, or we want ourself to be the one that gives the happiness and gets away from the distress. We want to become our own little god. We want to be like a movie star, and everybody else is just a part actor in our movie, right? Right? I'm the movie star, and you guys are just parts in my movie. But then all the other people are thinking the same thing. They want to be the movie star, and they want everyone else to be the parts in their movies. And pretty soon you have a conflicting movie, don't you? Right? So it's because we want something else to be the source of it. We want ourselves to be a play god. Why don't I play god and make things work out the way I want? People always want to have so much. You know, they hoard it. That's why people are getting in trouble now. People had rooms full of 500 and 1,000 rupee notes. And they were told, you know, last year that if you just turn it in, you pay 40% tax, you can keep 60%, right? And how many people listened to that? About four? Some people did, didn't they? And those people are not regretting it. The other ones are regretting it because you can go down. I heard that at one temple in Vrindavan, somebody gave like a huge amount of rupees, many crores. Did you hear this? What was it? $500,000? Is this where the pujaris decided to divide it up from themselves and they put it in the bank and got in trouble? Right? Yes, but I heard the pujaris took the money and tried to put it in their own bank accounts and got in trouble for this. You didn't hear that one? I heard it was more money than that. I heard it was like 10 million. But I don't know, maybe these stories are being exaggerated in rupees. Anybody hear this one? Yeah, and which one? Then the person giving. But the person were told ahead, if they just turned it in and paid the tax, they could have kept the 60%. And if you have a room full of 500 and 1,000 rupee notes, what good will it do you? What if the room has furniture in it or it's empty? Does it do much good? No? What can you do with a 500 rupee note now? Yeah, but then that will look suspect. They should have turned it in and paid the tax. Yeah. They were given the chance, they should have put it in then, shouldn't they? Yeah. Oh, yeah, so in other words, if the property is worth 10 crores, I tell you, sell it to me for 5 crores, and I'll give you 5 crore under the table. So on the books, it looks like 5 crore, but it's really 10, right? But then what are you going to do with the money? Yeah, so somebody gets stuck. Each person gets stuck with it. That's why I said that people with a bunch of it are in more distress than the people who had none. No bakers on the street are asking, what am I going to do with my 1,000 rupee notes, are they?
I think you could come with that, sir. Buy this property, give us
the order. Yeah, but that becomes suspect. Well, let them worry about that. We worry about surrendering to Krishna. It's not our problem, right? I don't try to borrow other people's problems or other people's resentments. It's just like sometimes some devotees, they're mad at another devotee. They're mad at another devotee. But if you're resenting that one and he resents that one, I'm not going to borrow the resentments or bad feelings, right? There's no point. If you have a bad feeling towards someone, do I need to borrow that? You resent them. Do I borrow the resentment? What for? If you have a bad feeling, that's your issue. So if they have a problem with their cash, that's their issue. But let them worry about it.
Yeah.
Yes. But someday people do it. They're mad at someone. They want you also to be mad at that person. Oh, don't talk to them because I'm mad at them. But you don't have to. This is called a resentment, where they have a bad feeling towards someone. But you don't have to borrow that from them. You can just say, well, that's okay. I let that go. You don't have to participate in that. Better not to participate in that at all. Just leave it be. All right. Shall we end there? Thank you so much for attending.